Hi, I'm Arlene Ford with this week's featured articles from the August edition of Bottom Line Personal, inside information from the world's best experts. I'll begin with this article titled, Medicare and Long-Term Health Issues, What's Covered, What's Not. And this information is from Maura Carley, MPH, CIC Healthcare Navigation, LLC. And a little bit about the author. She is a patient advocacy and she's with a patient advocacy and counseling company based in Darien, Connecticut, and she hosts of the company's YouTube video series. She previously held senior management positions with Yale New Haven Hospital, Stanford Hospital, and Kaiser Permanente and healthcarenavigation.com. Long-term health issues can lead to significant financial problems for patients who misunderstand Medicare's complex rules. For the most part, Medicare covers acute care services, not long-term care services, so it is important to understand how Medicare benefits apply when a condition is or becomes long-term. Most Medicare recipients don't know the answers to these questions, and when Medicare recipients are incapacitated, their adult children may not understand the details because Medicare is completely new to them. The results can be financially devastating. One family received an unexpected hospital bill for $800,000 because they did not understand that their mother had exhausted her Medicare hospital benefit. They also didn't understand how the Medicare hospital benefit is replenished or have additional coverage in force to help with their mother's care. This is a rare situation, but one with dire consequences. Here's what Medicare recipients and their families need to know about Medicare's coverage of lengthy hospital stays and skilled nursing facility care. Hospital stays. The 2014 Affordable Care Act reforms that took effect prohibit most health insurance sold in the U.S. from capping hospital benefits. But those reforms don't apply to Medicare, which has a 150-day hospital benefit limit per benefit period, but unlimited lifetime periods. The good news, most hospital stays do not exceed 150 days. Even so, Medicare recipients can exceed this 150-day limit even if they haven't stayed in the hospital for that long. The reason being, this 150-day benefit resets only after the patient does not use inpatient Medicare Part A services for 60 days. And what that means is a series of shorter hospital stays can exhaust the benefit if the patient hasn't gone 60 days without using Part A covered services. The good news is that a Medicare beneficiary is entitled to unlimited benefit periods as long as the benefit replenishes. Days 91 through 150 of Medicare's hospitalization allowance are lifetime reserve days that do not reset once used. For example, a woman has a hospital stay lasting 117 days. Medicare covers it, but because the final 27 days of her stay exceed the 90-day mark, those 27 days are subtracted from her 150-day total benefit maximum. For the rest of her life, her Medicare hospitalization benefit resets to only 123 days per benefit period. What to do? The best defense against overrunning Medicare's hospitalization limit is to enroll in a Medigap plan, also called Medicare supplements, if you remain in Original Medicare. All Medigap plans provide 365 more reserve days of lifetime hospitalization. Some Medicare Advantage plans offer catastrophic hospitalization benefits as well, so take that into consideration when considering an Advantage plan. Skilled nursing care. When Medicare recipients require a nursing home stay, their adult children may learn that Medicare covers up to 100 days of care in a skilled nursing facility. What they often don't understand is the difference between skilled services, which Medicare covers, and long-term care services, which Medicare does not cover. Long-term care services are required when a patient needs help with activities of daily living, such as getting dressed, bathing, and eating. Medicare will not cover a stay at a nursing home if it is necessary only because the patient cannot be safely left alone or he/she needs help with these activities of daily living. Medicare also won't cover a nursing home stay if the patient is unable or unwilling to participate in skilled services, such as a very elderly patient who is too frail to take part in physical therapy. If the patient has been receiving skilled services but recovers to a point where those services could reasonably be provided on an outpatient basis, then Medicare will not continue to cover an inpatient stay, but it would likely cover continued at-home or outpatient therapy. In a skilled nursing facility, patients receive care from licensed professionals in a medical setting under a doctor's supervision. Medicare covers skilled nursing facility stays up to 100 days only if the patient requires skilled services on a regular basis. These services might include physical therapy and/or other treatment from a licensed professional care provider, such as a nurse, physical therapist, speech therapist, or occupational therapist. The skilled nursing facility stay occurs immediately following a hospital stay of 3 or more days. This 3-day hospitalization rule was suspended during the COVID pandemic, but it's back now that the public health emergency has officially ended. To qualify, the patient's skilled nursing stay must be for an illness or injury related to the hospital stay, and the patient must have inpatient status at the hospital. Beware, sometimes hospital patients are officially outpatients even though they remain in the hospital for multiple days. If your status isn't clear, ask the hospital staff, am I or is my loved one considered an inpatient or an outpatient as far as Medicare is concerned? The stay might be considered outpatient if it was less than 3 days, was in a holding area, or was in the emergency department. This generally occurs when a patient is being observed to determine if an admission will meet Medicare's inpatient criteria. The exception, some Medicare Advantage plans do not require this 3-day hospital stay. But be aware, under original Medicare, the maximum benefit is 100 skilled days per benefit period, but the patient must meet Medicare criteria for ongoing skilled care for any stay to continue to be covered as an inpatient. If the patient has recovered sufficiently that he no longer requires inpatient care according to Medicare criteria, he can be discharged or remain in the facility without Medicare covering the stay. This determination will be made based strictly on the patient's health situation and not whether his family has made other care arrangements. When this occurs, patients receive a notice of Medicare non-coverage from the facility, citing a coverage end date. Medicare recipients have the right to appeal Medicare termination decisions. The appeal instructions typically are provided on the notice of Medicare non-coverage. But in practice, these appeals tend to delay the end of Medicare coverage by days, not weeks, if at all. Patients who remain in skilled nursing facilities after Medicare coverage ends must pay for additional days out of pocket unless the patient has long-term care insurance or retiree medical benefits that might provide coverage. Theoretically, Medicaid could pay long-term care bills when Medicare will not, but to qualify for Medicaid, a patient must spend down virtually all of his assets. Medical eligibility typically requires that the recipient have no more than $2,000 in countable assets. A small number of assets are considered non-countable and are not included in this calculation. Even if a patient qualifies for 100 days of skilled nursing facility care through Medicare, that doesn't mean Medicare will cover all the costs. Up to 20 days can be fully covered, but a $200 a day per day copay applies for days 21 through 100. Helpful information, many Medigap plans cover the copayment. Out-of-pocket costs for skilled nursing facility care vary with Medicare Advantage plans. When a patient has Medicare Advantage coverage rather than original Medicare, the Advantage plan staff, not the facility's health care providers, typically determine when coverage ends. Another potential source of confusion, a patient who recently had a skilled nursing facility stay covered by Medicare might not qualify for the full 100 days of care if he requires another stay. Readmissions within 30 days for the same condition should be covered, but the 100-day benefit resets only when the patient is so-called facility-free for at least 60 consecutive days without using his inpatient Medicare Part A benefit to pay for either hospital or skilled nursing facility inpatient care. What to do? Medicare recipients and their families should discuss in advance what Medicare does and does not cover, know whether there is long-term care coverage in place, and how the benefit works, what they will do if this loved one is discharged from a hospital or skilled nursing facility yet is unable to look after himself. Don't wait until this happens to seek a solution. Events might happen too fast to make wise decisions. Here are some Medicare guidelines. Inpatient hospital care must be medically necessary and ordered by a doctor, 150 days per benefit period, unlimited lifetime benefit periods. Days 91 through 150 are lifetime reserve days that do not reset once used. Skilled nursing facility must need daily skilled nursing or therapy care as ordered by a doctor. There's 100 inpatient skilled nursing days per benefit period, unlimited lifetime benefit periods. Our next article is titled, When a Loved One. Martin Shankman is a CPA, JD, estate and tax planning attorney based in New York City. He is co-author of Powers of Attorney, The Essential Guide to Protecting Your Family's Wealth. A man walked into tax attorney Martin Shankman's office some years ago with a problem. He had inherited a large sum of money. Nice problem to have, right? But the IRS had placed a tax lien on the man's assets, so anything he inherited would go to the government. His question, was there any way to keep the money his parents had spent a lifetime earning in the family? With proper planning, there would have been. If his parents had created wills, they could have left their money to this man in trust or to his children, bypassing the tax lien. Unfortunately, they died intestate without wills, so according to state law, their money went to their child outright instead of in trust. If the son had acted quickly, he could have protected the inheritance by disclaiming or rejecting the inheritance, but he waited too long. The IRS pocketed every penny. This is a stark reminder of why it's important to have a will. But if a loved one passes without having a will, there still may be ways to protect the inheritance. Why would you want a bill? When an adult dies without a will, state intestate succession laws determine who inherits. These laws vary. In some states, a surviving spouse receives everything. In others, a surviving spouse gets half, and the other half is divided among the deceased's children. For example, if there is no surviving spouse or descendants, parents and siblings typically may be next in line. Intestate succession laws can lead to unwanted outcomes. For example, a recently married second spouse might inherit everything while his or her children get nothing, or a grown child estranged from the deceased might inherit just as much as a child who cared for the aging parent for years. Even if a state's intestate succession laws perfectly match the way you want your assets distributed, it's worth having a will drafted. Dying without one may make the probate process slower and more expensive, and it means assets from the estate cannot be left to trust that could have protected them against heirs, divorces, lawsuits, tax liens, and other inheritance threats. The exception? Insurance policy benefits, retirement accounts, and certain other assets are transferred according to the terms of those assets' beneficiary designation forms, whether or not there's a will. But the solution may be a special trust to receive retirement assets or a trust to own the insurance. Having a will is especially important for anyone who has minor children. When parents fail to specify in a will who they want to raise their kids, the courts make this decision. That protracted legal process often involves court-appointed lawyers who are paid out of the estate to represent the kids' interests. Family dirty laundry being aired in public as the court tries to determine who can be trusted to raise the children, and custody decisions that might not match what the parents or children would have wanted. Despite all these risks, 2 out of 3 American adults don't have wills, according to a recent survey. Here's what to do if you suspect a loved one might not have a will, and what to do if a family member dies without one. If a relative might not have a will, this relative and the rest of the family will benefit if you can convince him or her to have a will drafted. But sometimes discussing wills with relatives goes wrong. It can create the impression that the person raising the topic is grasping for an inheritance. If you fear that a conversation about wills won't go well, ask this relative if he or she has completed a healthcare proxy. This estate planning document designates someone to speak on the relative's behalf if he cannot speak for himself. If your relative says he does have a healthcare proxy, he is more likely to have a will. If he says he doesn't have a healthcare proxy, point out how stressful it would be for the family to figure out who should speak for him in the middle of a medical emergency. That plea may convince your relative to make an appointment with an estate planning attorney, and that attorney inevitably will do everything possible to convince him to draft a will if he doesn't have one. If a relative dies without a will, it may seem like the surviving family members are without options or control. The courts appear to have all the power, but there are some steps loved ones can take. Research intestate succession laws for the deceased's home state. Easiest way to do this is to enter the state name intestate succession statute into a search engine. Pay particular attention to results from websites ending in .gov. If you don't find anything useful, try intestate statute and the state. These statutes can be nuanced, so consider paying an in-state attorney to help you understand the rules, ideally one based in the deceased state. Don't wait for a probate court to inform you who's inheriting. Decide if it makes sense to use disclaimers to adjust who gets what. An individual who is entitled to an inheritance usually has the option of disclaiming that inheritance, allowing it to pass to someone else. This can be a useful strategy when the person slated to receive the inheritance faces financial risks, such as divorce, lawsuits, tax liens, or future estate taxes. 3 details worth noting about disclaimers. The person who disclaims an inheritance does not have the right to decide who gets it. The assets pass to the person next in line to inherit. An estate planning attorney can help you determine who that would be under the state's intestate succession laws. Inheritances must generally be disclaimed within 9 months of the date of death. The disclaiming process requires drafting and filing of legal documents, so don't wait until the deadline. For example, had the man who lost his inheritance to a tax lien disclaimed it within 9 months, the money would have passed to his sons, who were next in line for the inheritance. Unfortunately, he didn't see an attorney about disclaimers until after the 9-month deadline had passed. Medicaid recipients might not be able to disclaim inheritances. Disclaimers can be a sensible option when the recipient of an inheritance is relying on Medicaid to pay nursing home bills. That's because Medicaid's strict income and asset limits would mean that the inherited money would be drained away by the nursing home. Unfortunately, Medicaid rules in many states prohibit disclaimers in these situations. Ask an estate planning attorney in the Medicaid recipient's state tax whether disclaiming is possible. Look for any ambiguity about the deceased's state of residence. As noted above, state law determines who inherits when someone dies without a will, but which state's laws? If the deceased owned homes in multiple states or spent considerable time living with a relative in a different state toward the end of his life, there could be room for debate. Read the intestate succession laws for the potential damage alternate state of residence and or discuss these with an attorney. If this state's rules better suit the family's financial goals, ask an estate planning attorney if there's a chance that probate proceedings could be brought to that state instead. We're reading from the section Your Money. Worst homeowners insurance company is Allstate. Rated on payouts and which risks are covered and not covered, Allstate ranked last out of 11 major providers. Its scores was brought down by limitations on plumbing leaks, mold damage, and roof damage, as well as other limitations on coverage and payment. The best insurer is Chubb, which caters to high net worth customers, followed by Amica, which received especially high marks for water and mold risks. View all of the rankings at crrrutgers.edu and enter homeowners insurance policy scoring dash all tables into the search box. Solar panels can raise your taxes. You incur sales tax when you buy the panels, and in some states, installing solar panels also triggers higher property taxes because of increased home value. The good news, 9 states offer exemptions for both. Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Iowa, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin. Other states offer either tax exemptions or limitations for value added to homes by solar panels, or exempt the panels from sales tax. To find tax incentives by state, go to cnet.com/energy-and-utilities/does-your-state-exempt solar panels from property taxes and sale taxes. Beware, thieves who steal iPhone passcodes can access your ID and money. A thief watches a user put in his or her phone's passcode, then steals the phone and immediately changes the password associated with the owner's Apple ID. This locks the owner out of the phone and gives the thief access to all the phone's stored passcodes, so the thief can steal anything stored in iCloud as well as access the victim's financial apps. Passcode interception and iPhone theft happens in places where people tend to be inattentive, particularly when drinking and socializing at bars. Self-defense: cover your screen in public. Make your passcode at least 6 digits and complex, such as a combination of letters and numbers. Set up additional passcodes for apps such as PayPal and Cash App. Set up a screen time passcode and enable account restrictions to prevent your Apple ID password from being changed. You go under Settings, go to Screen Time, Content and Privacy Restrictions, and toggle On. Then scroll to Allow Changes, and under Content Changes, select Don't Allow. Use a third-party password manager. Declare sensitive data such as scans of forms that include your Social Security number. That information was provided by Alex J. Argrio, who's a retired detective of the New York City Police Department, Sergeant Robert Ilechko, who's a lead investigator in Minneapolis Department, and Adam Aviv, who has a PhD, Associate Professor of Computer Science at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. Don't depend on plant ID apps. Smartphone apps that identify plant species using the smartphone's camera have become popular, but there is no consistent expert-driven vetting system that can determine the accuracy of these apps. The recent finding, most well-known apps tested were accurate only 80% to 88% of the time, a potentially dangerous shortfall if a user is trying to identify something that a child or pet ingested. The apps tested were Leaf Snap, Plant Net, Seek Plant Snap, iNaturalist, and Google Lens. The study was by researchers at the University of Galway in Ireland and University of Leeds. Your mental health. Fried food could be making you depressed. Recent findings are people who habitually consume the most fried foods had 12% higher risk for anxiety and 7% higher risk for depression, associations that were most strongly seen among men and younger consumers. To further investigate these findings, researchers treated zebra fish with one of the main contaminants in fried food, a substance called acrylamide, which triggered anxiety and depression-like behaviors in the fish. Acrylamide is an inflammatory substance, and chronic exposure is thought to interfere with the permeability of the protective blood-brain barrier and disrupt the brain's metabolism of fats. That study was of 140,728 people, led by researchers at Ziyang University School of Medicine in Hangzhou, China. For cognitive benefits, dancing beasts the treadmill. Either walking on a treadmill or ballroom dancing for 6 months was associated with improvement in cognitive tests, but people who danced outperformed walkers on executive function and processing speed, the time it takes to respond to information. And they experienced less atrophy in the hippocampus, the part of the brain that is critical to functional memory. Possible reason, besides providing physical exercise, dancing also has social and cognitive elements that call on a wider network of brain areas than walking. This study was by researchers at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, Bronx, New York. Your career. Employers are relaxing drug rules. With companies competing for workers and more states legalizing marijuana, many employers are dropping drug testing and compliance policies. About 9% of private companies worldwide plan to eliminate drug tests, and marijuana will no longer be a disqualifier for many state and federal government jobs. Even the CIA, FBI, and military are giving job seekers a shorter window during which they must refrain from marijuana before applying, or in the case of the armed services, offering a second chance to recruits who fail their drug test. Good news for older workers. Employers want you. Age discrimination complaints to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission dropped 45% from 2011 to 2021 as more companies are deciding that older employees' work ethic outweighs factors such as having to teach them how to use the latest technology. Three-quarters of people ages 65 and older say hard work is important to them personally versus just 61% of 18 to 29-year-olds. That survey was by researchers at NORC at University of Chicago, a nonpartisan research organization, and the Wall Street Journal. That's the final article from the August edition of Bottom Line Personal. This program and all of the programs you hear on Chris Radio are available on demand on our website and our telephone reader service. I'm Arlene Ford. So long until next time.